Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Welcome back to another episode of the DFL Swimming Podcast. Myself, Casey Stowe, and Desmond Sockshin coming back at it for another episode. The mid-season preview, along with the CSCAA dual meet tournament, big event coming up this week. I think first, gotta address the elephant in the room for the, I think, seventh time now with the audio, and I'm no longer taking the blame, folks. I'm sending that right over to Dez now. You know, I gotta say, on the behind the scenes last week, Dez, I would come on in the studio and, you know, he's like, "Oh, I can't hear you, can't hear you." So I'm turning my mic up.
I told you, you're feeling hot, man. What are you talking about?
This kid, he wants this podcast to fail. I'm convinced, and I'm not having any of it. So, we're gonna, even if we keep producing a trash podcast, we're gonna keep doing it. So, I appreciate everyone who, you know, listens to these terrible audio recordings and comes back and listens to the next one. So we'll see if we can ever figure it out. But with that being said, we're just gonna, just to give a little overview, just gonna run through some of the big mid-season meets this week, give our thoughts on that, head to the CSCAA dual meet tournament, and then do some predictions, review of the first half of the season before we get through mid-season. Now that I'm done monologuing, Dez, would you like to say anything?
No, that's all I got. Excited to talk about the mid-season. We got a couple of them on going on right now, actually, I believe. Yep. Georgia started today. So, yeah, we're maybe a little late on the weekend, but excited to talk about this and talk about the results hopefully next week.
Good stuff. All right. Well, let's just get straight into it. Georgia Fall Invitational. What teams are we looking at, Dez? You have it pulled up? All right. I will go Georgia, Georgia Tech, Alabama, Florida, FSU, and LSU down in Athens this week. I mean, it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I believe it is. This is like an SEC preview in basically all regards here. Georgia Tech, the one ACC representative in a pool of SEC teams that are looking great this year. Any teams standing out to you here, Dez, in this first midseason?
I think it's going to be a competitive meet, actually. I think Georgia and Florida are obviously the two teams that everyone's expecting to swim fast. I just saw, I believe, that Georgia just won the two medley with a 122. Very fast, breaking news. But, you know, keep your eye out on Florida State, LSU, and Alabama. All three of those teams have had, you know, outstanding meets so far this season, with some breakout summers. So I'd say keep an eye on those three teams, see what they can do. What do you think, Case?
Yeah, I got the FSU men as the team to watch on the men's side, and the Florida women. I think FSU men have the star power to have another great year building up the momentum they had last year, but I would look to see if they can take another step, get some more people into the new underneath the new cut line that we have for this year, get the relays in now, that sort of thing. And then the Florida women, certainly star power present there. Still, they're reeling from the Bella Sims exit. So, you know, I think it'll be an interesting storyline to watch here. I think overall, this is the midseason, if you're going to keep up with one this week, keep an eye on here. So,
yeah, I think the Florida women probably will dominate on their side. But keep an eye on LSU, and Jerry Hribar has been absolutely throwing down this year. With relay splits individually, that's gonna be my guy to watch here.
Absolutely, I think you're right on there. I won't tease too much, but I think LSU has a great thing going this year. When we take a look at some of the season in the reviews in review so far. They're definitely a team that I have my eye on as you work through both this week and into conference and NCU. So good meet overall. Let's keep it rolling. OSU invite over in Columbus, Ohio. What are we looking at?
OSU invite. Here we go. We got Ohio State, Indiana, Yale, Cincinnati, Louisville, Penn State, UCLA, Kentucky, and Purdue. So it's a loaded up meet. Swim Swam says that Notre Dame is there, but breaking news on this as well. Just got a call from an inside source that Notre Dame is actually going to Miami of Ohio Invitational. Just keep an eye out for them there. But some big names here, Ohio State, Indiana, powerhouses in the Big Ten. And then you have teams like Louisville, who has been absolutely on fire this year. We've talked about them a couple times already. These past few weekends, actually, they have just been throwing down. Yale has a couple really solid summers. Keep an eye on them as well. Should be a really good meet. Again, not quite the star power that we're looking at from Georgia, but there are a lot of teams here and a lot of really good summers that we could see something special.
Are you really going to go through all of those teams and not take a second look at your Kentucky Wildcat stats?
No, I'm good. No, we'll see. Yeah, they had a really good meet last weekend. We were talking about it. We'll see what they can do at midseason. You know, a little more rest under their legs. See if that sprinter, they got a sprinter, was 19-2. Maybe he'll get under. It'd be really cool for a program like that.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess we should mention, too, if we just, like we just said, Notre Dame not actually at this meet, which is opposing information to what Swim Swim has on their midseason article. So one of these teams doesn't show up. Don't hold this against us. We're blame Swim Swim for that. But OSU women coming off another Big Ten title last year is a team that I'm looking at here. In the power rankings, they've slipped below both Indiana and Michigan, I believe, in the Swim Swim power rankings heading into midseason. So definitely looking to see if they have a little chip on their shoulder into this meet, especially with Indiana being there as well. Are they going to step up? Midseason meets obviously not scored through, generally speaking, but I mean, I know coaches are looking at the back end of these meets to see early on how they shape up against especially other in-conference and NCAA rivals. So looking to them to see how they rebound after their, the dynasty that they've had over the last 3-4 years, especially in the Big Ten. Men's side, I'll have to agree with you, Louisville looking great. Penn State, the return of Mariano Lazzarini. Had a little off year last year coming off his Big Ten 100-breast title. So, good stuff. Purdue got a couple of good freshmen. So, yeah, overall, another interesting one there. Gamecock Invitational. Same lineup or same dates as the Georgia meet starting tonight as well.
So was the Ohio State Invitational, sorry.
So was Ohio State. South Carolina, UNC, Tampa, Florida Southern, Carson Newman, East Carolina, North Florida, Georgia Southern, and SCAD. Des, can you fill me in on, I don't know what SCAD is. Definitely a little, we have a little bit of a spectrum here in terms of talent, I would have to presume.
SCAD is, I believe, the Savannah College of Art and Design. They have a swim team. Would not have been my first guess for showing up at the Gamecock Invitational, but
here we are. Here we are on the DFL podcast covering SCAD. So you're here to hear first, folks. But I think really when you look at this meet, just as it is, you're looking at UNC as the main hitter. Tampa's a great D2 program, a couple national titles over the last couple of years. Minnesota boys even had a dual meet down there, a training trip against the Tampa boys. Definitely a good squad. But UNC, obviously biggest hitter here. I'm looking towards South Carolina a bit to see what they can do. Unfortunately, have just been, you know, hanging in the bottom of the barrel there in the SEC for a while now. Had some good swimmers come through the program, a couple of guys at NCAAs here and there. But definitely looking to see, they have a new freshman talent from none other than Iceland, Einar Augustsson.
Shut up.
Sorry, Einar. Butchered great breaststroker there, though. So we'll see if they, with the addition of his talent, what they can do in two-man relay, four-man relay, maybe get a relay to MCs this year, who knows. But maybe a little bit less talent coming through here at the Gamecock invite compared to the first two invites. But anything to add there, Des?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, UNC is definitely the favorite here if we're talking about points and winning the meet, and probably the team you got to keep an eye on. But, you know, watch out for Tampa. You mentioned this, but they're a really solid D2 program. They've always, the past 5 years, they've always been vying for that title. They won it.
They've really built a program off of, I mean, whether it's, you can take it as you will, but kind of they take some Division I talent that maybe didn't work out at their first school, and they're just looking for something different, maybe something a little bit more laid back. But they certainly have found themselves with a number of high-level talents in their program, and certainly have capitalized on that, leading themselves to a couple NCAA titles. So we'll see what they can hold on.
Keep an eye on them. And again, they're a team that really likes to throw down at big meets like this, suited up, maybe a little bit of rest under them. This is the kind of meet that you look for at University of Tampa and kind of see what they can do. So keep an eye on them as well. Maybe they'll have some upsets. Maybe you'll see some really fast times out of Tampa.
All right. Texas Hall of Fame Invitation. We're back to a big hitter here starting tomorrow night. Texas A&M, USC, Stanford women, Wisconsin, Pitt, and Northwestern. What stands out to you?
I mean, the obvious is Texas and then Stanford women. I think the battle on the Texas women and Stanford women's side is going to be electric. Two teams that are vying for top three at NCAAs, and you get to see kind of that matchup early on in the season. Probably won't really see it again, actually, until NCAAs. So Stanford women, Texas women, keep an eye on that. USC has been great this year, especially in the women's side. Talk a little bit more about that later. Texas A&M, I feel like we haven't seen much out of them so far this season. But, you know, they have a very solid program here, there, and we'll see what they got. And then Wisconsin, Pitt, and Northwestern are kind of anchoring it out there at the end. Haven't seen much out of those teams this year. They have had some pretty fast swims, but looking to see what they can do at midseason. Wisconsin with their new coach. Northwestern, I believe, third year under their new coach. So hopefully, you know, we can see kind of a culture change to old school Northwestern back in the early mid-2000s when they were, you know, winning Big Ten championships and NCAA records.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of teams to keep an eye on here who have, you know, kind of just been in the limbo of taking the next step. Kind of as you mentioned, I mean, Wisconsin, I think Pitt's got some sneaky talent in there. Northwestern came off a great year last year, USC as well. Texas A&M men is a team that I'm looking at, especially with a little bit of talent moving out of that program, and Baylor Nelson and Jacob Wimberly last year, two of their, I mean, tried and true relay guys for sure, especially with Wimberly and Baylor Nelson just being a jack of all trades. It's got to be tough seeing those guys go over to Austin this year. But I'm looking to see how they kind of respond and, you know, maybe fill in some of those gaps. There's still talent there, so I'm interested to see how that one plays out. Like you mentioned, Stanford women, they're on so far this year. And so that's always a good one. You know, we'll see how they stack up, especially against the Texas women, who I'm sure Bob is really treating this as, you know, their first real test to see where that women's program is. They've had some big wins already. And so we'll see how that shakes out. Anything else on that before we move on?
That's all I got from there.
Great. All right. Wolfpack Elite Invite, Greensboro. Great facility there. Want to run me through the teams?
Beautiful facility. Yeah, we have NC State, Virginia Tech, Army, Duke, Arizona, Auburn, George Washington, and then BYU. Again, a couple heavy hitters in there and some really, really solid teams. What are you looking at there out of that meet?
Yeah, obviously NC State, Virginia Tech, tough ones to look past. We just saw both those teams in action last week at the Raleigh Rumble. covered that quite a bit. I definitely want to, when I'm looking at this meet, what are some teams that maybe have gone under the radar this year? I'm looking at the University of Arizona to see what that men's team is going to come into this midseason looking like. We dueled them last year down in Arizona on our training trip, and they took it to us pretty good. Swam lights out. They have a lot of, I mean, yeah, they have a good core there. 200 freestylers, relay guys, butterflyers, you name it. They have a good, so I'm interested to see. I took a look through the results, and there's nothing that's really stood out to me as, you know, guys who have already swam ridiculously fast this year. So I'm interested to see where they put their athletes at coming into this midseason. On the women's side, I'm looking at Duke women, who have had a great year with a few big wins against UNC, Northwestern. They're, I think, number 11, I believe, on the Swimson Power Rankings coming into midseason. So are they able to capitalize with more big swims, getting more girls on that team into NCAA qualifying position, that sort of thing? Anything to add on those takes?
Yeah, my team to watch actually is Virginia Tech. Like you mentioned, we saw them last week, and Brendan Whitfield is absolutely thrown down right now in the 1500 free. But they lost a lot of pieces last year. Yusuf Ramadan's not there anymore. Carlos Cormarty's not there anymore. They got a lot of spots to fill, and they've been a very, very good team the past 4 or 5 years, and going to kind of see how Sergio has kind of filled in those gaps and see what they do at midseason, and see if they do better than they did last weekend at the NC State invite. And the women's side, we saw them earlier this year at the Georgia Tech invite. I'm talking about Auburn on the women's side. They've had some really good swims this year. They've had some girls that have popped off. They have, 21-50 freestyle already, and a couple very, very good swimmers. Now 5100 backstrokes. So kind of looking to see what they can do at midseason. And see if they can drop some time and then kind of show their cards a little bit.
For sure. I'll be another good one. SMU invite, SMU, Stanford men, and then we'll run through them quickly. Drury, Hawaii, Utah, Air Force men, North Texas, and Arkansas, which would be just women.
Yep.
Stanford men looked great this year, had a nice win in the tri-meet against Cal. Drury has produced some talent over the last 2 years, decade, especially in the D2 level. Hawaii people here and there, Carl Ostrowski getting the boys to NCAAs last year. Utah occasionally having people at NCAAs, and SMU, who's kind of in a limbo spot. And that's the team that I want to take a look at, especially SMU. Probably, back in the day, they were winning NCAA titles. They've been here or there, not in a great place. They were really building some momentum over the last few years, but especially with the exit of Jack Hoagland after last year and his 87th year of NCAA swimming, I'm really interested to see where they shake out now this year. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that was going to be my team to watch. Again, traditionally a very good program. Past couple of years, they've had some really good swimmers. Cotton Fields is another name that probably needs to be mentioned. He was very, very good long course, and he was an AB finalist, I believe, in the short course pool as well, NCAAs. So they've had some really good swimmers, but right now they haven't really done much this year. SMU invites an invite that they usually show out on, and they look okay. So I'm kind of looking to see if they can if they have anything else that they're under their sleeve right now. We'll see.
Yeah, no, it'll be see if they can continue the momentum they're bringing. Last meet of this first slate of midseason meets here in late November is the Mizzou invite. Probably the smallest and maybe least big hitting midseason. Missouri, TCU, Wyoming, FIU, Missouri, S&T, SIU, and McKendree.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a smaller meet. Missouri It's really been moving up in the last few years. SIU having great guys, names such as Ruard Van Rennen. Now Georgia stud coming out of there. They've certainly showed some promise. McKendree, another D2 powerhouse. TCU having people here and there making it to NCAAs. Took a look through, though, and other than Missouri, there's just not a lot going on with these teams this year, so it'll be interesting to see what you have event winners going. I mean, I'm sure there are going to be some great swims coming out of there, but that's kind of what makes this invite a little interesting, is on paper there's not a lot of talent or promise coming into this, and I feel like you never know what can come out of a meet like this.
Yeah, I'm with you. Missouri is definitely the team to look at, though. They should be dominating this meet, up and down. Luke Nebrick has been spot on this year. Already threw him down a 19-0 and a 42 low, I believe, in the 100 free. So keep an eye out for him on Missouri. Just a really, really good sprinter, young guy. So keep an eye on that. Other than that, though, like, McKendree has had some really solid swimmers in the past for D2, but I believe that they graduated. His name was Jack Lustig. I believe they graduated him. SIU, like Casey mentioned, had a lot of sprinting prowess. So just keep an eye out on them. They might have a couple swimmers that might shock you a little bit.
Definitely. One thing, now I know we rattled through all of those meets pretty quickly, and I think a conversation that needs to be had, especially as we see different things happening this year, whether it's dual meet tournaments, different dual meet formats, people just going fast in general all year compared to what used to happen in the NCAA format. People were not really worried about dual meets, having, you know, competitive, fast meets early on in the year. Now we've seen that trend kind of change where, I mean, there have been plenty of teams who have swam at least some partial rest suited meet so far this year. And I think that really begs the question of, is there still the same place for mid-season meets as there used to be? And should there be a change? And I don't know if we can come up with an answer now, but, and I don't know what your opinion is, Dez, but give me your thoughts on that.
Biggest thing that I think needs to change is pretty much none of these are scored out meets. A few of them might be, but if you're going to make mid-season meets interesting and try to make them different from, let's say, a regular dual meet, I think you got to score it and have a winner and maybe even make a little trophy or whatever it may be. Is there a place for these at mid-season meets? I think there still is. The biggest thing that you're going to get out of it as a team is the relay swims. You kind of probably have your relay swimmers figured out at this point, and a lot of teams haven't done an 800 freestyle relay yet. Some teams haven't done a four medley. Some teams haven't done, you know, two medley, two free, four free probably have been done. But those are the two relays. It gives you a chance to get a spot and a lane at your conference meet and possibly even NCAAs. If you can get that A qualification out of the way at midseason, I think that you're looking at a little bit easier ride there going into conference. Right, what do you think?
I'm gonna go with my Stephen A. It's gonna be on a reels clip later. Let me focus my camera quick so we have the clip that we need. There is no more reason for the traditional mid-season meet. I think that when you look at some of the formats that we are seeing now in the NCAA, and when we think about how we can expand some of these dual meet tournaments, swimming fast in dual meets in general, I think you're really looking at a regression of competition and the use of a team's time when you're looking at traveling across the country or spending a whole week at a mid-season meet that's regresses in terms of the competition that you have, the focus. I mean, and there are still teams that are putting the primary focus on getting to midseason. Mm-hmm. But I know for a fact, if you're looking at teams that competed at the Texas Challenge, whatever that was called, or the Texas Showdown, or the Raleigh Rumble, you can't tell me that there are teams that are not putting equally as high or a higher focus on those competitions where they're really being put in the spotlight. You have a team going to the Mizzou invite. I'm sorry, you're not going to be getting a whole lot of coverage from that. When we're looking at marketing this team, you can disagree with me once. We just ran through all those midseason meets. I'll probably take a look at the results. My focus this weekend is going to be on the Tennessee dual meet tournament.
Yeah.
And I think as swim fans, that's where the attention should be placed to show the decision makers that that is what the fans would like to see. That's what's engaging rather than, no offense, a potential snooze fest elsewhere.
No, I'm actually 100% with you there. The question is do we transition into that dual meet format for other teams? And here's my thing, is there still going to be a lot of really fast times thrown down? This meet last year, the Texas invite, was the meet that Rex Maurer popped off out of nowhere. I still think we're going to see a couple of those swims. I still think we're going to see a couple of those swimmers come out of the woodworks here at a couple of these meets. Does it hold the same meaning as it did maybe 3 years ago? No. I think you're right. But I think that the NCAA has to come up with a way to either make it interesting or transition into something that is more interesting for the fans.
Let me lay out for you what I see. This is my dream world of the NCAA midseason.
Let's hear it, Casey.
You take all of these midseason, every team that hosts a midseason, they can keep hosting the same meet at the same time of the year like they've always done.
Mm.
But turn it in to some sort of head-to-head weekend where you have recurring meets where you can still have all of your swimmers swim all the events that the coaches want their kids to swim.
Mm-hmm.
But turn it into something that's actually marketable fans. I don't know about you. Minnesota has hosted a midseason invite for the last, 10-plus years. I don't know if I've ever seen people in the stands who have not been family and friends.
No, you're right.
You get to a point where you can get people engaged in competitions throughout the year. I almost bought tickets to go to Tennessee, to Knoxville, to watch this event this weekend. This is exciting. I did not
think
about buying tickets to go down to Georgia, go down to NC State, to go to Missouri, to see those meets. Because, let's be honest, that's what we've seen in swimming. And I think to accept a subpar product that doesn't bring engagement to the sport is something that needs to be improved on. So I'll get off my high horse on that and pass it over to you to either prove me wrong or or gas me up.
I don't think there's any proven wrong. I think you're right. You know what the craziest thing is we had the Minnesota invite. There was a time where we had Texas, Cal, the two absolute powerhouses, Michigan, when they were on their peak. Yep. We had three of the top 10 teams, two of the top three teams at our invite, and we never filled out the stands. We never had anyone other than if those teams and that atmosphere of fast swimming doesn't bring people in, then you got to figure out a different way to do it. And I agree that this Tennessee invite is probably going to do that. And it 100% is. Now, the issue is, how do you transition the whole NCAA onto this? It's not going to be a one-year progression. They're going to have to, it's going to take some time.
And that's the unfortunate part. Yeah, you're never going to mandate teams. I mean, there's too much freedom in swimming right now. And I'm not saying you should totally get rid of that. But at least make it a situation where I think it's, and that's a call to fans in a way, make teams and university programs like Tennessee, who are taking the time to put on events in collaboration with CACAA and other people, Kyle Sockwell, make it known to them that this is what swim fans would like to see, so that it encourages other people to, hey, maybe we should get on board on this. Maybe this is the future of how we, build more engagement. I'm never saying swimming is going to be a revenue sport, But how do you move the needle? Right now, we just are completely accepting of, we will produce absolutely no revenue.
You just land on your back right now, giving up. We got to do something.
So this doesn't need to be, yeah, this isn't some kind of rip, but I think it's an important conversation as we're about to get into, you know, what this CSCAA dual meet tournament is going to look like this weekend. That's really what we should be spending our time on. But I think it's important to at least have a conversation of, I don't know what midseason is bringing to this meet. I think from September to the middle of December, head-to-head meets, try meets, nail it. From then on out, you're all in on championship format.
Yeah.
But at least in that way, you can have a build-up to something that's, you know, a high-caliber competition, something that people are gearing up for, excited for, fans are excited for, and then we can do the same thing building into February and March. So
I agree. Let's move into this Tennessee invite, this Tennessee meet, dual meet. This dual meet tournament does everything that Georgia Tech did wrong right. They really do. I believe there's double elimination. There's gender-specific scoring. The CSCAA is ranking the seeding based off of what their rankings were this previous month. So, you know, you have an actual, like, who is ranked highest in the CSCAA poll on the men's and women's side, and that's how they're going to be ranked and seeded going into this tournament, which I think is super interesting.
Yeah, and, yeah, like you mentioned, gender-specific scoring. I don't think diving is quite the same. Saw that as an issue down in...
I don't even know if there is diving.
Right. Okay. So there you go. Exactly. And maybe even if there is diving, have it be a separate thing, at least, and let the teams that have diving compete in diving and have it mean something for them rather than, you know, putting teams in situations where they don't even have diving. And then that's a huge swing of points. But I digress. I think the double elimination thing or the double elimination aspect of this meet is a great addition because, although the bracket style is kind of fun and traditionally what we see in tournament style, I think the double elimination allows for a better way to get the best teams to the overall championship meet because, say there's a team that maybe isn't ranked super highly coming into the meet, I think overall everyone in swimming wants the best meets to happen. And when you have double elimination, even if a team gets knocked out early by the number one seed or whatever, they have the chance still to work back up and maybe in a different meet lineup, like we see here in Tennessee, can come out victorious or at least make it a little bit closer than they had in that first meet. So I think that's a great aspect. Another difference here, the way they score this is a little bit unique, so I want to take a second to run through this. The way they're doing scoring points for each event is you're doing head-to-head matchups, basically. So if you and I are the one seed or whatever for our teams in each, this is my understanding at least, where if we're the one seeds for each of our teams going head to head and I get the win, that's 1 point for Minnesota, let's say. Then the two seeds go head to head. Let's say UVA gets the touch. All right, that's 1 point to UVA. And so you're doing 1v1, 2v2, and 3seed v3 seed.
Yeah,
that's how they're scoring the points. So each team can score up to 3 points per individual event. For relays, that's 2 points per head-to-head matchup for a total of up to 6 points per event per team. So that's a little bit interesting, I would say, and adds a little bit different dynamic to it, where in traditional dual meet scoring, you're seeing the winner of the event being easily the most highly rewarded. And that's like we've talked about before. If you want to win a traditional dual meet, you win events, and that's how you're going to win the meet. In this situation, that is not necessarily the case. If you, let's say you win the overall event, but your 2 and 3 swimmers lose, you're actually losing points in the event, which is a really interesting way. And I think it makes these really unpredictable considering that we have not seen this format before.
Mm-hmm. Going over the seedings here, on the women's side, the one seed is UVA, 2 seeds Michigan, 3 seeds Tennessee, 4 seeds ASU. So you have UVA versus ASU in round 1 and Michigan versus Tennessee on the women's side. And then on the men's side, ASU is the one seed, Tennessee's two, Michigan's three, UVA's four. So on the men's side, you have 1 vs. 4 is ASU versus Virginia, and then the 2 vs. 3 Tennessee men versus Michigan. You know, any cool matchups you see over there?
I was having a little fun beforehand, just like running through the swim cloud simulator, just to see, you know, if on paper what it's obviously using the traditional dual meet format to spit out the results, but Michigan, Tennessee on the women's side came out to 151 to 149.
Yeah.
Which I think gives a very clear indication that that one in the first round is going to be very, very close. So
yeah,
for all the fans out there, keep an eye on that matchup as we move into Thursday night. And we see these first round meets. Overall, I think it's hard to argue against the UVA when you look at this meet. I think they obviously have the most talent on the women's side. Their men's side's a little bit unproven still. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, Tennessee's got some event winners and so does Michigan, especially with Bella Sims.
That's going to be really good. That's my matchup of the meet. And even without Bella Sims last year, Michigan women took a really big step in the right direction. That's got to be the matchup of the meet, the first round at least. On the men's side, I think the Tennessee-Michigan matchup is going to be interesting as well. Tennessee's probably going to walk away with that one. That's probably going to be a little bit closer than ASU-Virginia. I could be wrong. But I do think that the Michigan men match up pretty well with the Tennessee men. They're pretty strong in their strokes and probably lack a little bit in the freestyle, sprint freestyle specifically, which is the exact opposite of Tennessee. So I think that poises for a really, really cool matchup there where you almost have a strength and a weakness on each side that kind of counteract each other.
For sure, yeah. And that'll make it interesting, especially with this unique scoring. Let's just say that we run into a situation where Tennessee gets the win versus Michigan on the men's side first round. I'm going to go ahead and assume ASU will beat the UVA men in the first round. Michigan-UVA could be a really, really good meet in the second round on Friday morning, I'm guessing, where you see a Michigan men's team still has a lot of talent. Tyler Ray, Eitan Ben-Sherritt.
Yeah.
There was a
foul fat.
Yeah, I see this as a chance for Dez's Savage Seven to really step up to the plate on the UVA team and prove to be the class that they're cracked out to be, or that they're supposedly are.
I don't know. I think that'll be a really good matchup. I just don't know if they can match up with Michigan, man. I don't think they're quite there yet. A name you didn't mention is Jack Wilkening, who has been an absolute beast long course and short course the past 2 years for Michigan. I just don't know how they match up, right? I think they do match up pretty well, probably a bit better than the Tennessee-Michigan matchup, but we'll see. I don't know. Maybe they'll...
What I look for, though, is, I mean, you have obviously the marquee names on UVA being Thomas Heilman and Maximus Williamson, who have already shown up this year. I'm looking at those other names in that recruiting class, people like Thomas Mercer. If this is a meet that they've been preparing for, maybe the training's been tough so far this year, adjusting, things like that, which is understandable. Can they show up now and take a step forward or get to some of the hype that they've had coming into this meet? And I think that really could shift the tables for them. I mean, you're looking at a lot of freshmen who are unproven. Michigan definitely has, they have a lot more returning and proven talent to where you can say, we kind of know what
we're going to
bring to the table. Yeah. I think UVA offers a little bit more of a wild card aspect that, you get on a roll in a meet like this, things can, this is going to be mass chaos, especially with people trying to understand this new scoring. It's going to be mass chaos. And so I think you can get on a run and get it going and catch people off guard.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a really cool matchup. A name that you didn't mention, that I think is going to be really cool, who's kind of going to counteract that Jack Wilkening, is actually going to be David King, who had a really good summer. I believe he went 155 in the 200 back long course. He's a 138, 45-1 in the backstrokes. Matches up with Wilkening really, really well. So that'll be a really cool race to see. I think that matchup's going to be really cool. Going back to the women's side, I really think the matchup there is going to be Michigan-Tennessee, and they're probably going to see each other again in that race later on. The champion's probably going to be UVA. They're probably going to walk away with this one on the women's side.
The men's side. Do you think ASU continue? Do you think they take another step forward here this weekend, or do you think we're going to see a little bit of the same old, which is obviously still good enough to win this meet?
It depends on how far of a step forward I think that Tennessee takes, honestly. They're probably going to be the team that's going to match up best against ASU, and if they take that step forward that they are capable of, they've had a lot of really fast swims this year, but they don't quite have the depth in some of their stroke events that they need to be dominant. And I think if they take a really big step forward, I don't know if ASU is going to be able to do that. Now, I say that now, and every single time I say that, ASU proves me wrong. So Herbie always has something up his sleeve, and I'm looking forward to seeing how they perform this weekend.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one. Overall, I think there's going to be some really – I think we'll have to probably dedicate a whole episode to reviewing this meet. And I think it's going to be really interesting to take a look at how these intricacies of this new format – because we can look on paper how this meet works and, you know, what the format is, but to actually see it play out like we saw in Georgia where we had some issues on the back end. On paper, I think this looks a lot better, and after seeing Georgia, this should be an overall better product.
Yeah.
But that remains to be seen, and so I won't give it all of its flowers that it deserves maybe until we see that. Something we didn't mention is that they also took the same route as in Georgia of having a different meet lineup in each side. I guess in this case they're doing it on each day of the meet. So on the first day they're doing the sprint freestylers and the hundreds of stroke. On day two they're doing the sprint freestyles and the 200s of stroke. And then on day three they're doing the more traditional dual meet lineup that we see the 16 event order. So I don't know, after seeing Georgia, I actually don't really think that plays as much into the meet as we maybe thought it would. I think, generally speaking, the better team still is the better team and comes out on top.
Yeah.
Maybe this will work out differently. It's kind of a hard thing to measure, especially as a fan. It's hard to really see that too clearly, but it's worth mentioning as being part of the overall format, too. But on the men's side, you know, I think I'm just going to go out and I'll take the Tennessee men. Why not?
Yeah, that was going to be my pick as well. I had them as a top three team going into the year, and while I haven't been correct about that yet, I really think that a guy like Caribe is going to show up at a meet like this, and that's who my winner on the men's side is going to be as well.
I think especially if he can get a couple of event wins against the ASU big hitters, that's that means something. You won't get rewarded in the same way that you do in a normal meet for the event win, but I think to get ASU where they are absolutely the best will send a message, and maybe they can capitalize it. Each coach has an at-will timeout during the meet, so I'm really interested to see if I can get a viewing of one of these meets to see how that plays out. If we have coaches, you know, calling the timeout right as the boys are stepping up onto the block, or what happens.
Ice them.
I know. That could be interesting. Or maybe they'll use it to get a guy a couple extra minutes of cool down. Who knows? But swimmers are allowed to enter as many events as they want to in these meets, which, I mean, you're only going to be able to swim probably three or four anyway. These are going to be fast meets. That's an interesting take. Maybe you all of a sudden realize we need one more event to take the meet. You call your timeout, say, you got to get in the cool down, warm down. You're swimming this event in 5 minutes. So,
Ilya, I know you just got out of the 100 fly, buddy, but you got the 53 next, right?
Some pretty interesting drama to these meets. Maybe
I agree.
Please, some coach out there, please pull that into effect. Tell Guy, I know you just won the 100 free. Actually, you're going to have to do the 100 fly in about 5 minutes. So, cool down, son.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Men's side, we both have Tennessee. Women's side, I assume we both have UVA winning it. I think the conversation is going to be more for second place. I think Michigan is going to take another big step in the right direction. Like I mentioned, they did last year, and I think Bellison is going to have a huge mean. They're going to come out on top here.
Yep.
Second place.
I got to agree with you on that. I think Michigan's looking good coming off a building year last year, and I think they're all continuing that, especially with the addition. So I think there's a lot of great teams here, though, and there definitely could be surprises here. Definitely a more even playing field compared to what we saw in Georgia. And so I'm really excited to see this. I know that Kyle Sagwell is going to be down there commentating on the meet. So I think I'm really just overall excited to see what this looks like. The commentary should be good, better than Georgia. The streaming should be better. So definitely looking forward to it. So
yeah.
With that, I think I thought it'd be fun. Dez and I thought to, one, give our DFL of the week and then go through both a swimmer and a team of the fall up to this point before we see some midseason performances. So, Dez, you want me to run through? I'll run through mine quick, and then I'll toss it over to you, and then we'll get ready for a fast week of swimming. So overall, we're in a lot of meets this week. One thing that's interesting, though, this is my DFL of the week. What is the Ivy League doing? Just swimming. Hear about the only Division I team who swam dual meets last week.
Yeah.
And I know they sometimes will swim fast, and they get really into some of the rivalry meets at interesting times of the year. But I don't know. I don't know what they're doing the week before midseason. I don't even know. I barely even know if Ivy Leagues are go to midseason meets. So it's I know we mentioned some of them. I think Yale's in Ohio State. So, but that's something that's weird to me and something that's just, what are we doing?
Yeah, I think they start the season actually quite a bit later than everyone else. I don't think they start swimming as a team until like at least a week into September.
Okay, so you're just telling me they're maybe a little bit behind? All right, we'll still DFL of the week for me because start your season with everybody else. moving into my swim of the fall. We'll just group it into one, guys. Let's just do swim of the fall. I'm looking at Pitt, Julian Koch. Now, I spent a little bit of time just, you know, looking around. There's a Julian's last name is Koch, and I could try to pronounce it like they do in German, but I'm not even going to try. This man, coming in as a sophomore at Pitt this year, had a solid freshman year. I think it was 43 or 42 high in the 100 free last year. He's already gone 41-8. And when you look at the top 10 in each event already, I was doing some perusing. There was a lot of familiar names, and I was looking through, and I said, I don't know if I've ever seen this man's name before. And so, Julian, 41-8 does it for me. Team of the fall, I'll give both on this side. NC State women, I think, are off to a great start. A lot of big wins this year have looked great all around. I alluded to it earlier. LSU men are off to a great start this year, and I'm really interested to see what they put down at midseason this week. Pass it over to you.
I love it. I'm going to start it out here. My DFL of the week is going to be not scoring midseason invites. We kind of talked about it, touched on it earlier. We are in the year 2025 where we need to take a step in a positive direction and do something positive.
I don't know if anybody else does. That might just be me.
Hello, can you hear me? Hello.
Yeah, you're back. You're good.
All right, cool.
We're good.
My DFL of the week is not scoring midseason meets in the year 2025. We are in a dire time in our sport where we need to make things interesting. Why are we not scoring meets? We talked about how midseason's already kind of boring, and there are a lot of midseason meets that don't score it out. You have a lot of big names, big teams in one spot. Why are you not having a winner? Why are you not having a trophy? Why? Like, let's do something. Let's change something here. We talk about it a lot. Let's do it. That's my DFL of the week. My swimmer of the fall, I have two of them on the men's side. Ben Del Mar, who has been pretty lights out. He's been 152 and 52-1 in the 100, 200 breaststroke, which are very impressive. But coming off of a summer season where he went 59 and 209. So just keep your eye on him as we go into midseason. He's my sleeper pick for placing top three and possibly even winning those breaststrokes come NCAAs. And then on the women's side, I have Mina Abraham out of USC. She has been lights out, 142.5 in the two free. She's been 440.6 in the 500 free. She's been 47.6 in the 100 free. And she's even gone 22.4 in the 50 free. She's from Budapest, Hungary, and she is an absolute animal right now. That would be my swimmer of the fall so far on the women's side. For teams, I'm looking at, for the women's side, LSU women. SwimSam just ranked them in their top 25, but they have been having an outstanding fall so far. 51.6 in the 100 backstroke from Zoe Carlos Brock. Sorry if I mispronounced that. They've had a 4.42 in the 5 free. Megan Barnes, who's been also lights out in the 200 free with a 145.1. And they look really good. The best that they've looked since Maggie McNeil kind of came through there. They've already had 2.5900 breaststrokes, which is hard to come by, and already a sub 2.10 in the 200 breaststroke. Looking really, really good, LSU women. That's my pick so far on the women's side. The men's side actually is Princeton men, who not a lot of people are talking about. Casey kind of just shit on the Ivy League a little bit. Michael Schott had an outstanding summer season. And so looking at him to have a great fall, great semester, and they're hosting their midseason after Thanksgiving. And so far this year, they've had 42.600 freestyle from Patrick Dinu, and they've had 3.19s. And again, they start out later in the season, so they haven't had a lot of swims yet. 200 freestyle, they've had.
Start your season on time.
They've had multiple 135s and 134s in the 200 freestyle. And they just look really, really good all around. The best that I'd say they've looked in a while, it's always them and Harvard fighting for the Ivy League come championship season. But they've already had a 4,600 back, 143, 200 back. And again, Michael Schott is looking to really take that team to the next level.
Great stuff. Let us know your thoughts in the comments. People are a little hesitant to do so, but if there's someone that you think we missed in terms of performance of the fall or team of the fall that's been standing out, let us know, and we'll catch you in the next one. One couple of notes before we close off. If the auto's bad on this one, this will be the last episode of the DFL Swimming Podcast. I can promise you that. And I want to give my flowers to the SIU Salukis. Or Alex Santiago is a name that I was looking for earlier in the podcast. Absolute stud. Sorry, the Salukis, not the Huskies, the Salukis. And Alex Santiago carried that team on his back to NCAAs the last couple years, and I gotta tip my cap to that man, no longer in the NCAA, but great swimmer overall. So with that, we'll catch you in the next one. Thanks for tuning in to the DFL Podcast. Catch you later.
Deuces.